Gone are the days of Henry Ford's factory, and I think it was in Dearborn, Michigan, where he had his own forest for the wooden components. He had his own iron ore mines in upper Minnesota, and had his own shipping line to move the iron ore down to his factories. So he owned the raw material sources for most of the elements that went into the early cars that he built. And it went into his own factories and his own dealerships and distribution systems and so on. But that was early on in that industry, and he had to basically invent and build all of that himself. And we often call that vertically integrated. Well, today we're kind of in the opposite realm of that, where we have a extensive supply chain, even for the simplest of products. The supplier's contribution to the system's reliability is dramatic. I'd say a third or more of the failures that occur for a product are associated with a component or with a supplied raw material. And it's not just the supplier we purchased it from, it may be the supplier's supplier. Some years ago, there was problems with a red phosphorus, which is a flame retardant material added to the epoxy that goes onto components that went into disk drives. So if you were buying disk drives and that after, say, a few months they failed, the root cause might have been a change in a supplier's process that changed the size of the particles that were being used in that particular flame retardant in that particular epoxy that was used on the components that you purchased to use in your disk drive. So that supply chains can get convoluted and rather extensive. And there's a lot of trust that goes into getting it right throughout the process. And a lot of what we do as reliability engineers, the basic processes of identifying risk and understanding where the sources of failure are, has to extend beyond just the design and assembly processes that are under our direct control. The supplier's contribution to your basic reliability is as important as getting the design right. So some of the basic steps is make sure your suppliers understand what you want from a reliability point of view. Give them a full reliability requirement that includes the function, environment, and environment local to that part that they're supplying. So if it's inside the case next to the power supply, it may be at a higher temperature than ambient, for example. But also, what's the probability of failure, or the failure rate, or the probability of success? It's reliability requirement. Now, it's not the same as your system reliability requirement. If you want the overall system to last 95% over 1 year, the components need to be at a higher reliability, especially in series system type configurations. But another part that we can do is take a look at, well, what's their capability? If we don't have a long history with the supplier of having provided us durable parts and with no issues or very limited issues, then, well, what are they capable of? Doing an assessment of their reliability program and find out whether they can consistently produce reliable components. Look at their attitude and approach. What's their culture? All of those elements that go into internally improving your own reliability program. But if you had the choice of working with somebody that knew how their products would fail and understood the parts of their process that controlled and minimized those failures versus one that says, oh, we've had shipped 1 million units and we haven't had too many failures. Now, do they really understand how they're achieving that versus the first group that clearly did? Which one would you rather work with? So part of this is not just doing a transaction to buy components. Is part of the deal is that you want the reliability as advertised and understanding what those risks are that are being provided by your suppliers along with the components they're shipping you. So just getting it to be meeting specifications may not be good enough. Components can come with latent defects or with symptoms of failures that are yet to come. electrolytic capacitor, not electrolytics, the multi-layer ceramic capacitors, when they're not processed correctly, they'll have the right capacitance, but they'll have a latent defect that makes them prone to cracking. And a cracked capacitor can lead to all kinds of different circuit failures and board failures. But the notion is that how do they manage their system such that it not only meets the capacitance requirements, but it meets the reliability requirements over time also. So while I was at Hewlett-Packard, we used to use an acronym called TQRDC, and later they added E for environment, and I understand talking to a colleague recently that they added B for business also. But T was technology. Does the supplier have the right technology to supply the components we're looking for? Let's talk about quality and process control and quality systems and quality management, which in part includes the reliability elements. R isn't for reliability as much as I'd liked it to have been. It's for responsiveness. D is delivery. C is cost. Cost was late in this list because it's not the most important thing. So part of this is when looking at and working with suppliers, it's a whole lot easier to build those relationships earlier such that when you do have problems, you have a good working relationship to solve the problem and not create a lot of friction. The suppliers oftentimes need to be treated just as you would your own organization. And the reliability programs and quality programs at your suppliers are as essential for the performance of your product in the field as your own systems. When you're working with suppliers, in some cases, you're going to be co-designing or creating custom parts. Well, let's make sure that you understand the criteria and it's in clear, unambiguous terms so that you both understand what you're trying to achieve. There's not much sense in hiding information from your suppliers, especially when you're considering them the experts. They need enough information in order to actually meet your expectations. I don't know how many factories I've been in that SPC was little more than a show for customers that were asking about it. Understand the statistics well enough to understand whether it's actually being used or not, but also sometimes it's pretty easy to tell it's just for show. If you walk onto the factory floor and the SPC, the statistical process control charts, are on the visitor's bulletin board behind glass, it's not an example of a working, functional process monitoring system. It's worth asking some more questions in that case. Process capability. We're going to spend quite a bit more time talking about both SPC and process capability later in the course. But it's something to work with your suppliers on to understand the interrelationship between what they're capable of producing from part-to-part variability to what you expect from your specifications. And then how does that impact the performance of your product and the reliability? In cases that it's a more complex product or system, it's demonstration or some other types of reliability testing. They may be making claims, but where's the data? Recently, I worked with a client that was looking at the reliability of a component they were purchasing. So we got on the phone with the vendor, the supplier, and they listed about 20 different tests that they were doing for this particular connector, which looked really impressive, and they passed all of these tests. So we just simply asked, well, how many samples did you do and what were you expecting to fail and why were you running that particular test? Now, they didn't have good answers for what failures they were expecting and they didn't see any failures, but they also only ran one sample per test. So we didn't really learn a whole lot from those reports other than that they did a very cursory job of evaluating their products. I suspect it was more, let's list a bunch of tests, and for most customers, that will be sufficient and they won't ask any more questions. But even in your own internal programs, you should be asking, what's the purpose of this test and what decision is it going to support and how accurate does the test need to be? So if you're working with suppliers, ask those same questions. Why did you do this test? What is the risk of failure? What's expected to fail? And how are you measuring that? And to what confidence does this sample represent your population? Those are some basic questions. But as you're working with your suppliers and you're building prototypes and you see a problem with the supplier's component, you need to work closer with them to find out, is it a supply chain in their process or up previous to their process in their supply chain? Is that where the issue is? Or did we not get the requirements right? Or was there an element of our environment and design that causes failures because of the way your product works? In order to do that, it takes a lot of open communication. So for your critical parts or for your custom parts, it's really work on that relationship side, the soft side of building this supplier reliability connection. When you can get formal, and a lot of quality organizations have what we call a failure reporting and corrective action system, or FRACA system. And I think it's in one of the last sections of the body of knowledge that they talk about it in particular. Another name is a corrective action plan, or CAPA. And I may have the definition of what CAPA stands for incorrect. If you know that, let me know. Add it to the comments. But those are just tracking systems. And you can make it part of your contract and your agreement with the supplier, response times, and so on. But basically, you want to work with your supplier to solve those critical problems. Now, one of the things to do, and I should have mentioned this earlier, is that if you have a failed component on a board, the inkling a lot of times is to separate the component from the board and put another part down and see if it really was that component. Now, keep in mind that that component that failed may have been the cause of the failure, and it failed itself and everything else is working just fine, or it may have been the victim of something else failing. So let's say there's a glitch in your power supply and it causes a digital component to run over voltage and fail. Well, it was simply a victim of something else going wrong. Putting another component there may last for a little while and then eventually fail, or maybe something else fails. Without doing the appropriate root cause analysis, it'll be very difficult to find out where the real culprit lies in the causing these failures. So part of this is don't remove the part unless it's you've gone through all of the other steps, that's the last step to do. I also generally advise customers and clients not to send parts back to the supplier until they've exhausted their failure analysis approaches. A lot of times suppliers are not the best at failure analysis, and it's much quicker to get good answers to talk to your supplier about from an outside lab or from your own failure analysis labs. So working with your suppliers is also not necessarily expecting them to be the experts at failure analysis. It might be part of your assessment early on to see what their capabilities are in that area. Regular program and project reviews. It may be appropriate to bring in your critical suppliers into your team, essentially, so they fully understand how their component fits into the larger project. And then when you need to, is work with your suppliers on long-term testing. Now, these tests may be unique to your application, so it may make sense to do in-house and do it yourself. But if you can partner with your supplier and share the results of those long-term tests, they may learn about accelerated testing and how it works in that particular application, but then they also can contribute to the cost and maybe actually manage and run the test for you. So just a touch of a couple of different aspects with suppliers. Of course, it could be an entire course in and of itself of working with suppliers to achieve your reliability objectives. But this is just a cursory overview of all the many elements that go into reliability management in the strategic level. The bottom line for your customers or for your suppliers is, are you building a partnership with them? If it's an adversarial role, when something goes wrong, it usually means that information stops moving and it takes longer to solve any issue. If you build a trust and a partnership with your critical, your key suppliers, then when something doesn't work out quite as expected, you can work together to solve it. So in the next segment, we're going to move into reliability program management and to the second block of the body of knowledge underneath reliability management. And this is where we start looking at the various tools and techniques that make up a reliability set of activities and figuring out which ones we should apply and which ones we shouldn't for our particular circumstance. So as you go through the course, you're going to notice that there's a handful of quizzes, and there's early in the course, you should see a sample exam. And the sample exams are, there's two versions you can take. I recommend both, as I'll be providing a 150 question sample exam. Give yourself 4 hours and give it a trot. See what it, see how you do on the timeline. But more importantly, use it as a way to practice the process of taking the exam. The other one is on the ASQ website, and it's 75 questions, and you can take it timed on their site, so it'll give you 2 hours. Again, give it a shot early in the program of your preparation to see where the areas are that you've got strengths and where you need to study some more. So as you go through these segments, please look for the comments box at the bottom of each lesson, or I'll be setting up a form for the class, and you can post questions there. And I've given you my email address a number of times, so you can also just send me your questions directly, whichever you're comfortable with and would suit the way you want to learn the best. Let me know. So I mentioned the class form, and so if you see other people's questions there that you can help them with, think of it like a study group. And even though we may be dispersed around the world, there's no reason we can't help each other as we prepare for the exam.